stun slaps.
I agree completely. I pretty much said so. But in fact, I think the place to do that is in the sermon. And the people are not told this. The fact is that the fundamental issue with the liturgy is, as a member of the body of Christ, joining yourself with his sacrifice, joining him to offer the sacrifice. And that takes precedence over everything else. The only justification for music is that it supports this. And that was not the way to put it. The real justification for music is that it supports this. Yes?
Responsibility as purveyors of
I can give you an anecdote. A very good choral conductor was conducting a summer institute. A Catholic, in fact, was conducting a summer institute, and they're doing a Haydn mass. And they were singing the Credo. He said, well, you know, this represents certain ideas. Bring those out as you sing it. And one of the students said, but what does it mean? And he said, well, the translation is right underneath there. And she looked, and then he looked, and was appalled. It was a false translation, I mean, a fake translation for people who didn't believe in the creed. It was a completely fabricated, different translation in the edited edition. So there's a long way to go on that side of things. I think some choral directors are quite sensitive to it, but many don't have the background. Yeah, that's right. Yes.
I've noticed over the years that it seems like in the traditional Catholic world, in reaction against a misinterpretation of active participation, there's sometimes been a tendency to take the music away from people and to have the heart and soul of everything. And I wanted to know, in light of what you were saying, how would you, do you think is the proper balance in terms of polyphony and chant and the difficulty level of the chant and getting the people involved in singing that?
I think that it's essential to cultivate the singing of the ordinary at the Mass by the congregation. These are also treasures, and they're beautiful, and the congregations can sing them. And because they're the ordinary of the Mass, they can be repeated, and people can learn them. And because they're the ordinary of the Mass, they are the liturgical action at that point. Nothing else accompanies the Kyrie, at least in the New Rite, or the Credo, for instance. And so that means it's properly for the whole congregation, and it's distinct from the proper which accompanies something else. I think that, as I said before, the proper role of the congregation in witnessing is witnessing the procession. Likewise, the proper role of the congregation in the after the lesson is to meditate upon the lesson. And the general instruction says so. These chants are meditation chants. And then the people are given trivial antiphons and unsuitable psalm tones, which were made for monks to sing their psalmody, 150 psalms in the year, so they're so simple. 150 psalms in the week, so they're so simple. And I just think that there is really very little that's conducive to meditation in the psalm tones. In fact, I once asked an expert, what is the purpose of the responsorial psalm? And he said, it's to give the people something to do. I think you're giving the people something to do by singing a gradual, giving them something to meditate. And that is a much more fundamental thing to do than it is just to repeat back a silly antiphon. There was a question, yeah.
I didn't raise my hand before.
Well, it's been 50 years since we've had the English, and nobody's come up with a really satisfactory solution to.
I guess it's like English chants. Take well, all of this and just make.
Yes, you see, it's been 50 years since this was posed, and it's been about 10 years since anybody has been doing something serious about it.
Yeah.
And it's going to take several generations of working it over and finding out how it works, and the end stage will be something about half as good as the Latin chants. So that, I mean, that, you see, those developed over centuries, and they developed in a time when the liturgy was central to the culture. And so I think the solution, rather, is to offer the people both. To mix Latin and English in a single mass, to sing Latin masses, English masses at different times. And this goes back also to your question over here about singing Paul Franklin's. You see, there are those who would say the general instruction actually precludes the use of an entire polyphonic mass. There are two answers to that. The general instruction is only an instruction. It is not liturgical law. Liturgical law is something like Musicam Sacrum. Musicam Sacrum says the choir can sing the entire polyphonic mass. In that particular case, Musicam Sacrum is a higher level of rubric than the general instruction. But there's another, I think, better solution. At least I think it's a good solution because it's mine. That is, on the ordinary days of the year, Sundays of the year, the congregation sings the ordinary of the Mass. And in the course of the year, they sing six different ordinaries. And they know them well. And then on the feast days, the choir sings a polyphonic ordinary. You can't say that people have been deprived of singing the chant. And yet you can't also say that people have been deprived of hearing a polyphonic ordinary. And because they are singing a Latin ordinary regularly, they know those texts better than they ever did before. And when they hear it sung in a polyphonic setting, they're sympathetic to it. And they follow it well. As witness the singing of the Lord's Prayer, for instance, when we sing a polyphonic mass, they sing the Lord's Prayer. They sing it extremely beautifully. So I think that those two things can be made complementary. Yes.
Regarding the, you said the congregation can sing six different ordinaries.
Well, my congregation.
Your congregation. But subpar congregations like most of us are involved in. in our situation, we've been singing the Misa de Angelus and Credo for years now.
Yeah.
And every time I say, can't we do something else? They say, well, the congregation knows that one, and they're singing it, so they just have to keep doing it. So I don't think we ever will get change other than from Lent and Advent.
Well, you'll have a change of Well, yes, that's very well put. The problem with the divine office is again the Latin problem. We have the divine office in Latin. We don't have a sung divine office in English yet. And we don't have a sung divine office in the New Rite in Latin, even. It's true there's the Mundelein Psalter, but that has made so many compromises that it hardly can stand up to the chant. And I think the better thing to do is to gradually work out a good English divine office that uses the chant. I mean, I think the Lauds and the Compline that I've put together are viable English divine office pieces, but it's going to take a lot of work to do that. The problem with the Mundelein Psalter is two. With the Psalter, you have very simple psalm tones because you're going to have to sing 150 psalms in the course of a week. So the psalm tones are not elaborate or, in fact, all that interesting. So you have antiphons that have a little bit more melody. They don't take very long, but they add a melodic complement to the psalmody. The Mundelein Psalter sings the antiphon texts to the psalm tone. There's no point. Likewise, it's using the Mundelein psalm tones, and they generally have too much descending motion. The Gregorian psalm tones all rise to a peak, there's a pause, and then they descend. The Mundelein psalm tones very often have descending motion in the beginning part of it. And so I think that's not going to be a good basis for developing an English office. I have to recall what a monk once told me. I mean, we know that one of the benefits of the antiphonal singing, of course, one of the benefits of the antiphonal singing in the history, everybody knew this, that it was like the seraphim, and that the reason for having antiphonal singing is because the seraphim cried out each to the other. And yet there's a practical side to it. If you're singing 150 psalms in the course of the week, it's going to take you 6 or 8 hours in a day, and your voice is going to get tired. So if you divide the choir in half and sing back and forth, it's only 3.5 hours a day, and it saves the voice. A monk once told me that they were instructed that each half of the choir ministers to the other by singing the psalm to them for them to reflect upon. And then they sing the next verse for them to reflect upon. So there's a lot about the divine office that is so beautiful, and we shouldn't let it be lost. Thank you.